Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Densel. And I saw this funny story on ESPN.com. I was on there. I don't go there a lot these days. In fact, I was just listening to local Pittsburgh sports radio this morning. They were even talking about how ESPN is losing money. And the main reason is because of people cutting their cable and going to Netflix and the internet and various other forms of getting their sports. And ESPN and their, I guess the parent company would be Disney, ESPN is feeling the effects of that, and it's been letting people go and everything else. But and given how my attitude toward ESPN, which is an attitude I've had for a long time, that I don't know how people watch that channel. I really don't. Now, I know that I'm not in the demographic necessarily, although I follow sports. I'm not in the demographic. That demographic is for teenagers into their 20s. I still don't know how those kids, both boys and girls, watch it at all. I have no idea. It is some of the worst programming on a major station on TV. That's my attitude. If I had cable and ESPN just happened to be part of it, I would only watch it for the sports. If they were playing some game that I would want to watch, like NFL or Major League Baseball, the programming, Sports Center, those back and forth arguments, sports argument shows, and everything. Absolutely the worst stuff I've ever seen. And in any case, I was at ESPN.com. I wanted to see what happened during the World Baseball Classic game last night between the Netherlands and Puerto Rico. And if you're wondering how the Netherlands can get to the semifinals of the World Baseball Classic, remember, Curaçao is part of the Netherlands, and I think most of their players technically come from Curaçao and not the actual Netherlands, which is in Europe. So you got to remember that. But Puerto Rico, which to me has looked like the best team so far, beat them 4-3. The United States plays tonight against Japan. That's a game I'm going to watch. But I saw this article about peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on ESPN.com and how it got started. They talk about Kevin Garnett and how that became a thing, how that sandwich became so popular in the NBA. And I just got to tell you, I totally agree with that. I'm 46 and a half years old, and I have enjoyed peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. Technically, I eat, to really get technical, I eat peanut butter and jam sandwiches. I prefer jam, the texture of it. There's something about it that's a little bit different than jelly. I prefer the jam over the jelly. Peanut butter and jam sandwiches, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are so good. And really, they're not that. Of course, peanut butter is a pretty good food. I wouldn't call it the perfect food or anything, but it's kind of like honey. It's a good for energy. It's not too fattening. There's a lot of good things about peanut butter. And then if you eat it on wheat bread and you don't slobber it everywhere with jelly and jam, that's a pretty good meal. And it's a cheap meal, and it's excellent if you are an athlete who needs a quick pick-me-up, whether it's during a basketball game or during a golf round. And I can tell you that I've taken peanut butter and jelly sandwiches to my disc golf tournaments. That's a true story, because sometimes they don't serve us lunch. I'll bring peanut butter and jelly. I love it. So it's just funny, and it's a huge, long article. It's just not like a 500-word article on ESPN.com. It's this huge, long thing. Excellent. You should read it. I know I wouldn't necessarily tell people to go to ESPN.com, but if you are a lover of peanut butter and jelly, peanut butter and jam sandwiches like I am, you should go. Let's get to the show. We might as well just follow up on something that I talked about yesterday. Tommy Lahren has been suspended at the Blaze at Glenn Beck's TV channel. I guess that's what it is. I've never watched it. I'll be honest with you, I don't know where I would even go to find it. I'm serious. But whatever that is, radio show, TV show, internet show, whatever it is, she's been suspended for a week. You know, I have to admit that I don't know how I feel about this. Even though I think that she is a sham, I think she is an opportunist, I think that she is a provocateur, I'm not sure that Tomi Lahren has any inherent values other than moving herself up the career ladder. And I think that she would say and do anything to make that happen. But suspending somebody for expressing a view, there's of course all the proof out there because she couldn't be more of a public figure these days. I mean, that's where she wants to be. She wants to be out in public. She wants everybody to know her name. She wants everybody to know who she is when they see her. In the end, at this point, we really don't know what Tomi Lahren thinks about abortion at all. We don't know what would happen if she got pregnant. We don't know that. And being that The Blaze is supposed to be a conservative media outlet, I can understand the knee-jerk reaction of Glenn Beck to suspend her, given that she expressed a non-conservative position regarding abortion. I get that. And I understand he's the boss. He can do whatever he wants. But you also have to keep something else in mind about all of this. And as you know, I'm no big Glenn Beck fan at all. I'm not. I think that he is also a sensationalist, but I also think that he's closer to a conservative than she is. There is a part of me that also believes that Glenn Beck is a little bit of an opportunist, and I say this knowing that he was a never-Trumper like I was in the campaign going back to last year. I don't know what makes Glenn Beck tick. I have no idea. He seems like a little bit of a strange guy to me. So having said all that, I think that's a bad move. You know, he should know. Does he not know by this time that she is an opportunist? Does she? Granted, you know, it's... He certainly seems like a little bit of a hypocrite in all of this as well. The reason that she is on The Blaze and has been, I guess, for a while, his channel, is because she's a bomb thrower, because she's a provocateur, because of this, because of that. But I don't even know her. Never met her, don't care to meet her, ever. And I know this. There is no doubt in my mind that she is that way. And being that she went into some place like The View and couldn't handle herself in a very good way, obviously showed she's not a very good speaker. She's not that intelligent. No matter what her grades, anybody can get good grades in college. Anybody. I don't know what her grades were. That then he can't then turn around and suspend her when she continues to be a provocateur and says things that she did on The View. It seems a little strange to me. So I'm not, you know, you can be in a position like I am where you say, I don't like Tomi Lahren. I think that she's a fraud. I think she's this. I think she's all these negative things. But then say, I don't believe that she deserves to be suspended by The Blaze. I think that Glenn Beck has had reasons. If he was a true conservative and everything, he had multiple reasons that had much more to do with the future of the country over the last year or year and a half regarding Donald Trump and how Tomi Lahren was treating all of this. He had plenty of reasons back then to say, this is what I want my channel to be back then, and have an effect on election, instead of waiting till now when she goes on The View and expresses a pro-choice, pro-abortion attitude that may or may not be true. But we know why he kept her around. She was good for ratings. And in that way, Glenn Beck, as much as he is a never-Trumper and has opposed Trump and everything, he's no different than Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, and all these other people. He kept her around because she was great for ratings. And frankly, there were a lot of people tuning in to watch her who had no idea what she was saying, don't even care, but she looked nice, and Glenn Beck kept her around. So now, after all this time, he also looks like an idiot in suspending her. She didn't do anything illegal. She wasn't drinking and driving. You know, she wasn't trafficking in cocaine. She didn't beat some other girl up or a guy up. You know, she didn't slander his company's name, everything. All she did was go on there and make herself look like an idiot and express a non-conservative position. So it's very, once again, I know that he's allowed to do anything he, you know, as long as it's not sexual harassment or anything. He's allowed to hire and fire whoever he wants. But to me, what she did there is just what she has been doing for 2 years now. And probably what she was doing before that is worse than what she said at The View, because I'm not even sure what she thinks on anything. But surely something that continues for the 2 years that she was doing it, supporting Donald Trump, running interference for him, lying for him, and everything else, is surely worse than one statement she says about a particular political issue on The View, in which she was, how long was she on the episode? For 10 minutes or something? It seems kind of weird. And I think the only reason that Glenn Beck suspended her is because he's worried about how he looks instead of, you know, the pressure that it came on from him from other people. I didn't put any pressure on him. I haven't sent any messages to him. He can employ whoever the heck he wants. What do I care? He doesn't care what I think. But I think that the reason he did this is to save face, which is horrible as well. And he might be opening himself up to a lawsuit because of it, possibly. We'll see. You know, instead, being that she's on his channel, and he pays the bills and everything else, I think that this could have been turned into a very teachable moment if Tomi would have gone along with it, for him to come onto her show and they talk about her appearance there and exactly what she meant. That could have been a good teachable moment. Instead, what did he do? He did what Trump did. He went to Twitter and expressed all these things. And then on top of it, he suspends her, doesn't even say, you know what, let's talk about this. You and I have known each other for a few years now. We don't always agree, but your show's coming on. I think it'll be good for people to hear you and I talk about this and what exactly you meant and what was your appearance like and why I disagree and why you disagree with me. And then we can talk this out. It would have been a great teachable moment. Instead, everybody goes, you know, right to the wall and everything. People get suspended. She gets suspended. He goes on Twitter, everything else. My main complaint with her, if you will remember, is that she's a fraud. Which, if Glenn Beck was honest and he was paying attention, he would have known this by now. He would have known that she is not helping conservatism if, in fact, that is the reason that his channel exists, which I think it is. But he kept a non-conservative around. Anybody that would get, any media person who would get behind Donald Trump the way she has and everything ceases to be a conservative in my mind. That being including Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, and the rest of them. And he could have handled that back at the time and said, you know what, you're not part of our programming. If that you have the opportunity to do any kind of show you want on this channel, but we have a particular ideology here, all right? You are not part of it. It's no different than, once again, just having started this show with ESPN. It would be like having a cooking show on ESPN. It would be like having a basket weaving show on ESPN. At some point, the owner of ESPN, the guy who runs the place, or woman who runs the place, just has to say, you know what? you're out of place here. Maybe you need to go to some other channel. That's, if I was Glenn Beck and was running the Blaze and I had started and everything, and I had hired a young woman who I thought had some promise, and then she started getting behind Donald Trump in all his non-conservativeness, no matter if he was running against Hillary Clinton or not, I would have just called her in and said, you know what, Tomi, I don't think, if this is the show you want to run, you have every right in the world to do that. You have every right in the United States to think anything you want and say it. You're just not going to be able to do it here. That's not what we do here. All right? Our mission statement at The Blaze is something different than what you are expressing. I'm sure, obviously you're popular. Obviously people agree with you and everything. But you are going to probably have to find somebody other. So I'm going to give you your 2 weeks notice. All right? You want to leave now? If that means you want to leave now, but I'm going to have to let you go because that's not what we do here. And on top of it, I'm not going to threaten you and say either you change your ideas or else. You are perfectly fine to think anything that you want, okay? Whatever gets you up every morning, fine by me. You're just not going to be able to do it here. He should have had that conversation with her a long time ago. But he kept her around because of the ratings. And that makes him a bit of a fraud as well. But she's suspended. Is she going to get fired? Who knows? Who knows? I think this is all terrible for conservatism. And this is why I told my buddy Dave last night in a message I sent to him that I still believe that Donald Trump, because it coming president, is worse than Hillary Clinton coming president in the long term. I know in the short term, it seems like Donald Trump right now, we got Neil Gorsuch, you know, he's up in front of Congress now, in front of the committee talking, and we're going to get to that in a moment. You got these great cabinet members allegedly and everything else. And in the short term, it's perfectly fine. It's in the long term that I think that we're going to suffer for this. Just like the Democrats in the long term suffered with Barack Obama. And it may be that from the Trump years, whether it's 4 or 8 years, the only thing that we can, as conservatives, can even brag about are 1 or 2 Supreme Court justices. And I'm telling you, that 8 years from now is going to seem like very, very small payment for everything else that we put up with. All right? And in fact, we probably wished it would be the opposite, that the economy and all these other things went well and that 2 liberals got put on the court instead. That's where I think we might be 4 years from now. 8 years from now. In fact, I think the odds on is true simply because of what I've seen in the first couple months. It goes back to the stripper analogy I always think of in everything. She looks great, but can you put up with everything else? Can you? We'll see. We'll see. But Tomi Lahren suspended. As of, I guess, today. Maybe she'll be back. Maybe she won't. I'm guessing she's going to land on her feet just fine somewhere. But I also feel, on the other hand, that she's a little bit like Katrina Pearson. I think that she's going to burn bright for a short period of time, and then she'll be gone because I think that she's a one-trick pony and has no core beliefs at all. The only people that stick around for the long term are people with core beliefs. And as soon as they stray from their beliefs, they start to suffer. Very quickly. It's all short-term stuff here. And we as humans, we're very poor at planning for the long term. Very poor. That's why your average person dies with less than $10,000 to his or her name. That's why. Very, very poor. And I think that's what's going on now. People want gratification now. They want this now, that now. But they don't want to sacrifice anything. You know, they don't realize that how good they've had it. Yes, the Barack Obama years were very, very bad. Obamacare sucks, everything else. But too many people believe that the last 8 years were the worst 8 years in the history of the presidency, in the history of the United States. That's not true. I think the people of the 1930s would have taken 2009 to 2016 any day of the week. The people who lived in the Civil War would have taken those years as well, would have taken the World War II years as well, the World War I years, as you know, would have taken 2009 to 2016 over anything. It's just that we as the United States, we can do much better than what went on then between those years of 2009 and 2016. And some positive things did happen during that time. Actually, Republicans did do very well. Conservatives did do well. Gun laws and gun rights got reestablished during those years. There's a lot of decent things to look at, but being that some people have successfully portrayed it as the worst years ever, this is what you get. So, no. It's going to see. We'll have to see. Let's move on. Neil Gorsuch, he's up there. And I guess this morning the topic of Roe versus Wade came up. And I'm not going to say, I think he would safely say, reading the transcript as I did, kind of tiptoed his way through that. He said that Roe versus Wade is a precedent, and it should be treated like every other precedent that the court has ever made. He said that that precedent of Roe versus Wade is strong because of the ruling in it, the Casey decision in 1992, which I don't know the specifics of. But he didn't say that it was constitutional law. He didn't say that it was unconstitutional law. All he said was that it is an official precedent for the Supreme Court, and it's something that needs to be considered should the topic of abortion or anything tangential to that come up. Now, is this going to be good enough for Democrats? Probably not. But at this point, I really don't see what the Democrats can really do about this. It doesn't feel to me like they are going to go to the wall on Neil Gorsuch. They are not going to pull out all the stops and try to stop him at any cost. They are not going to try to bork him like happened in the 1980s. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. I think because in many ways, and I think this is one of the reasons that all of this the hubbub with the guy who got appointed and then wasn't allowed to be seen in front of the Senate, in front of the hearings, to even get a confirmation, an up or down vote. That I think the Democrats kind of view the seat that Scalia emptied. You know, he died, of course, unfortunately. Conspiracy theories regarding that, by the way. They kind of see that as like the right-wing conservative Republican seat anyway. And I think that they're saving their ammunition, figuratively, not literally, figuratively, for the next appointment, should Trump get one, and that appointment be a liberal like Ruth Bader Ginsburg who retires. I hope she retires. I do not hope she dies. I hope she retires. Or maybe even a Justice Kennedy or a Stephen Breyer. One of those people, because I don't think Kagan and Sotomayor are going anywhere. They just got appointed. But those other three, I think the Democrats are going to save their ammunition for if one of those others bows out, decides to retire. I also think that the reason that they may go easy on Neil Gorsuch is because if it were to be a conservative who decides to, maybe Justice Thomas just says, the heck with this. This ain't worth it. Because Roberts isn't going anywhere. Alito's not going anywhere. Let's say Justice Thomas, who's been there 25 years now, says, you know what? I'd like to spend more time with my family. I've had enough of this crap. It may be also that the Democrats are waiting for that. So they can say, hey, we went easy on Neil Gorsuch. We, you know, he's on the court now. We went easy on him and everything. You know, we want a little payback for this. I think that that's also the reason that the Democrats may save themselves for the next time. Because if, you know, I'd have to guess, what I think I know is that should Trump get to serve out his 4 years, and if somehow the Congress stays in Republican hands, and I think that's up in the air at this point, frankly, in 2018, and if he wants to make another what you'd call good pick, then I think that the Democrats know that's possible, and they're going to save themselves for next time. They're going to let Trump have a pass on this one, and maybe they're working their own kind of art of the deal. So, as conservatives, of all of you people who are excited about Neil Gorsuch, don't think that this is going to be as easy next time. It's not. It's going to be way, there are going to be higher stakes next time. Because Democrats are going to have a real good marketing opportunity, being that they're going to say, hey, we went easy on Neil Gorsuch. Yes, we didn't vote for him, but, you know, we kind of let him slide by there. It'd be nice if Trump went our way with the next one, unless he wants real trouble. And they may also save it in case one of the liberal judges decides to retire. Now, regarding Roe versus Wade, as was stated in, for example, hotair.com, where I was reading about what has gone on, what went on this morning. In saying that Roe versus Wade is a precedent like any other, I know what conservatives want them to say. They want them to say that it wasn't good law, that it was unconstitutional, and everything else. But as they stated at hotair.com, that, you know, him stating that it's a precedent, you know, you shouldn't make too much of that, because you know what else was a precedent that eventually got overturned? Plessy versus Ferguson. It got overturned as well. A ruling from the late 1890s. What now, all these years later, 120 years later, is considered to be horrible, bad law. Horrible, horrible, bad law. One of the worst decisions maybe in the history of the Supreme Court. And it took years to be overturned. It took until the 1950s for it to be fully filtered out of our thinking and our lawmaking and our justice system in the United States, at least at the federal level. So regarding Roe versus Wade, because something is a precedent doesn't mean it can't be changed. It can be. And I think in reading between the lines on Neil Gorsuch's answer, I think that's what he's trying to say. If, in fact, he believes that Roe versus Wade is bad law, he just stuck to the facts and saying it's a precedent. It can be considered like any other precedent out there. And I think the Democrats, although they know what that means, I still think that they're not going to do – they're going to give him a hard time about it. But I think that if they were to hold the confirmation vote today – it would be the same today as it would be a week from now, as it would be a month from now. All the Republicans, are going to go with him. All the Democrats are going to oppose him, and he's going to get confirmed, and that'll be that. I don't think there's any answer on any question that Neil Gorsuch could give that would change any of that. I mean, even if he gave a liberal answer, you know, it might be that the Democrats suddenly vote for him and the Republicans vote against him and he still gets confirmed. I think that's where we're at in this. And so all of this is just theater. This is political theater. This is not, you know, this would be much different if the Senate was in control by the Democrats. If this was 2013 and Donald Trump was president back then, where the Democrats had a majority, it would be much different then, much. I just don't think that Chuck Schumer and the rest of them are going to try to filibuster this. They're not going to say that. I just don't see that happening. On top of that, I saw this story, if you want to believe it, that 43% of the American people can't name one person on the justice on the Supreme Court. I can name all eight. And I can name Scalia, who died. Scalia, Alito, Thomas, Roberts, Kennedy, Breyer, Sotomayor, Kagan, Ginsburg. How's that? Pretty good, huh? Without any notes, I did that. But I got to go to the break. You've been listening to... Well, and what I was going to say is, we shouldn't make too... us who are political junkies, we shouldn't make too much of this, because almost half of the people don't even know who anybody's on the Supreme Court anyway. So there's that. Got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism. WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. It's very funny that I was on that break. Just conveniently, as soon as I went to the break and stopped recording, there was a car that's parked in the parking lot next to where I live. Started the security alarm started going off. So this horn started going off. Ring, ring. How convenient that it happened right after I stopped recording. I hope it stays that way. Let's move on to something else. And I want to combine... I know this is going to be very strange, but you're only going to hear this kind of comparison on this show, because I don't know how many other hosts really think like this. My brain is just weird like this. Just my brain loves ideas. Me as a people person, I'm friendly and everything, but you know, me and people, sometimes we get along, sometimes we don't. But me and ideas, I love combining ideas. I love thinking about hatching new ideas, and if I was in a comic book, I might be more of a evil mastermind than anything else. Just saying. Any case, there is a website or a YouTube channel run by a guy whose name is Sam. I say Chewy, but I'm going to guess that's not it. It's C-H-U-I. Sam, first name Chewy, C-H-U-I. He is Asian. I don't know if he's South Korean. I don't know. He may be an American. Very possible. I have no idea where he's from, what his nationality is, where he was born. Nothing. But he's a very popular YouTube channel in which he takes trips on airlines with first class accommodations. Very, very, very upscale first class accommodations. And so you find him... And he writes for some airline blog or something as well. And I don't know how he pays for all this, because a lot of these flights are very, very expensive. I don't know. I have no idea how it all works out, the financial side of it. But so you see him a lot of times on 747s. You see him on the Boeing 380s, which are those double-decker jets that have been around for about 10 years. And, you know, he gets the caviar, he gets the champagne, he gets the wine, and all of this. And mainly, most of these airlines, I should say this way, none of these airlines are American airlines. And I don't mean America, I mean Southwest, American, United, whatever other airlines the United States now has. These are all foreign airlines, mostly airlines from Southeast Asia, so Singapore, South Korea, Japan, or the Middle East. For example, Etihad, is that how you say it? Etihad, E-T-I-H-A-D. E-T-I-H-A-D. I've never heard that word pronounced, so I don't know. But I watch these videos just because I know with my finances and my net worth and everything, I'm never going to get to experience any of this. I've flown a first class a couple times in my life. I have. Not on my own dime. And it was awesome. But what he's doing is so far above that. But what's interesting to me, and we can learn a lot about government regarding this, if you follow me on this. Most of these airlines that he is flying are government airlines. They look like private airlines, but they're not. For example, that airline I just mentioned, Etihad. It's not Qatar, it's UAE, United Arab Emirates. That airline was started by the government. They wanted a flag carrier, and just the leader of that country just decreed, we are going to have an airline. And so all of this government money was put into starting this airline and buying all these new jets and everything. And so you have government jets that regular people fly on, but they have these very exclusive, they're almost like little apartments on these planes for people. Using government money to make these planes, probably costing to use these first class accommodation. I mean, they're even higher than what you would think first class is. It's like crazy. They're in one of the, it almost looks like he's in his own little compartment on a train, something. That's almost what it looks like with the bench and the seat and the TV and his own private washroom. It's crazy. Crazy. Just don't even realize this stuff goes on for us regular people. But here it is, government money paying for all this, something that most people in that country are never, ever, ever going to be able to afford, ever. What also strikes me about this is that he does these videos and it shows him getting into the airport the whole way through check-in, all everything right to him getting to his destination, leaving the other airport, wherever he's going. And it's amazing on how many flights on these government airlines that have these very exclusive accommodations in first class, how many times he is the only one in that section. The only one. In fact, that is more like the standard. I have yet to watch a video of his where he's flying on any of these airlines and first class, whatever he's doing, is packed or even half full. I've never seen that yet. I'm going to say I've watched about 20 of his videos. And he does I want to say, for the record, he does a really good job. Really, really quality job with this. You know, he should be commended. But these are government airlines, these big, huge, expensive planes, these very exclusive places on the plane that only a few people can afford. Not just that, but in the airports, they have these exclusive clubs with these buffets and everything else. In every one of these situations that when he's using it, it seems like nobody else is there. Now, you do see people lining up to get on the plane for coach. You know, the rest of us regular people fly in the United States and elsewhere, being packed into the back, you know, shoulder to shoulder with people. But those people don't get to do what this guy does, don't get into these exclusive areas of the airport and everything else. All of this government money spent and hardly anybody is using it. Now, see, there's a reason. Now, getting back to why he never seems to be on an American airline, a United States airline, I should say. I think that he did do British Airways, which once again is a government entity. He was on Air France, which is a government entity. But I have yet to see him fly first class like this, that to my knowledge, that is an actual private airline like we have in the United States. Now, why is that? Why, you know, and the United States has more jets, passenger jets, and people flying than any other country in the world. So why hasn't he, at least to my knowledge, at least not with the most recent videos, last 20 or so, does he do anything in the United States? Why is he not flying on American airline, United States airline, American or whatever, and flying in first class to show that? You know why? Because American Airlines, and once again I keep saying that, I don't want you to think that particular company, United States Airlines aren't government financed. These airline corporations actually have to watch their pennies. If I had to guess, if you were to look at all these airlines with all these fancy accommodations and caviar and all of that, no matter what they are charging people to fly in that part of the plane and get all that exclusivity and get your own personal flight attendant and everything else, I'm sure those airlines lose money every year, probably at least in the easily well into the millions. Whereas in the United States, if our airlines were handling passenger travel like those countries did, and they were all in our companies being private, our airlines being private, they would be out of work, out of business in a year. All right. So, see, I'm sure that there are liberals who watch the Sam's videos and think, why aren't American Airlines like that? Why are not United States Airlines? Why doesn't Southwest do this? Why doesn't this? Why does it? You know why? Because these dang United States Airlines are so cheap. All they care about the bottom line. They should offer nicer accommodations for people. They should be doing what these other, not realizing that what those government airlines are doing, you can pick out any one of those, the Middle East airlines that do this, and the Southeast East Asia airlines, and the European airlines and everything. All it is a waste of capital. It's a waste of materials. It's a waste of money. You have a Boeing 747 that virtually, I mean, these areas are so big, one-fourth of the plane is empty. But it's still using the same amount of fuel to get from Australia flying to the Middle East or the Middle East to Europe. It's still using the amount of fuel, but it's not as full. It actually has less people on it. In fact, less people can travel on those jets because all of the room taken up by this space in the airline that hardly anybody can afford. That's government for you. Whereas in the United States, for all those people that complain about air travel, you know why airline travel is so cheap? It's because people can be stacked into these airlines and they get where they're going on time safely. Yes, there's no caviar. Yes, there's no champagne. Yes, there's none of that on, I don't think. Now, granted, like I said, I've flown first class a couple times. It was nice. Got some free drinks, and I don't drink alcohol. So free soda, all you can drink, and some nice meals and nicer seats and all, awesome. Absolutely had a great time. But those airlines are choosing to do that by choice, not because some government entity came up with the idea of an airline and said, you know what, we're going to offer the fanciest accommodations on the world just so they can have their status in the airline community, because that's part of it. The truth is, all of these government airlines in the rest of the world, although they may be fancier, they are a big waste, a huge waste. And this is, you can watch, if you are an astute person, you can watch those videos and enjoy them, because it's fascinating to see the lengths that these airlines go to. It's amazing. Parts of these airports that they make up these exclusive clubs that these first class passengers get to use, they are as nice as any restaurant that I was ever in Las Vegas, and I was in many. Not because I was eating there, simply because I had a job where I worked on printers and fax machines. And for example, the Bellagio, and I've been in Bellagio being one of the nicest casinos in Las Vegas, I've been all the restaurants there working on their printers and fax machines. I could see how everything worked behind the scenes. Some of the nice places I could never afford to eat, ever. But I got to walk in there during the day when they're kind of empty and go in and say, hey, we're going to have a problem there. And the company that I worked for had that job, had that contract. These accommodations in the airports are nicer than any place I ever saw in the Bellagio. That's the truth. But it's a big waste. Nobody's using it. It's a waste of space. It's a waste of food. It's a waste of electricity, on and on and on. Why? Because it's not market-based. It's all a function of government. And if somebody, once again, is astute and watching these videos, you then begin to understand what the problem is with government being in charge of anything in the private sector. Because you can see, if you think about it hard enough, a correlation between these government airlines and all this wasted space and wasted fuel and everything else, and people probably wanting to fly somewhere but can't because the plane's full. You know, they can't afford to fly first class, but there's all this empty space because people can't afford that. So these 747s, A380s, only 3/4 of each one is being used. You know, and people can't get This is a function of a market distortion, just like Obamacare is. Obamacare is no different than what they're doing with those airlines over there. Yeah, absolutely. Obama and Democrats and now too many Republicans say, well, everybody deserves to have coverage. Well, that is no different than these governments in these other countries with these airlines saying, everybody deserves to fly first class, or we need to have the fanciest first class in the world, airline in the world. Doesn't matter that it's going to crowd out business for regular people who want to fly. We need to think that first class should be a part of every one of our... Doesn't matter that it's not market-based. Doesn't matter that only the 0.001% of the population can even afford to use one of those first class cabins. I guess that's what you want to call it. But they're going to do it anyway, thus restricting access to flights for other people, which really means they're going to have to use more planes, which means more use of fuel, more use of electricity, more busier skies, more likely for crashes, on and on, more clogging up of a world airline air traffic control system that is probably already maxed out. All because they want these particular jets to have these things, even though nobody uses them. This is no different than what Obamacare is. When you start deciding, government decides that everybody deserves great health care, and it should come from government. And it's not something that's market-based. The reason that we have cheap airline prices in the United States, I mean, right now you can fly from Pennsylvania to Florida for like $60 to $70 plus tax. Like from Latrobe, which is a small airport, to the airport that's technically nearest me in Clearwater St. Pete Airport, which I've flown out and flown into a few times. You can fly from Latrobe to Clearwater St. Pete on Spirit or Allegiant Airlines for like $70 plus tax. There's no first class there. I don't even know if you're going to get a meal. You're definitely not going to get a meal. You may get some ginger ale. You might have to pay for wine. If you want to have a glass of wine on the flight, you might get some peanuts. But you know what? You're going to get from Pennsylvania to Florida in about 2 hours and 20 minutes. You're going to get there on time. You're going to get there safely. And you're not going to have to worry about getting a flight. That is the market at work. The point is getting from point A to point B in the most efficient way possible without getting killed. It's not to get it and along the way be treated like a movie star. Because just imagine if Allegiant or Spirit, for example, had first class accommodations on their planes that were as fancy as they have in the Middle East and in Southeast Asia. Just imagine what would happen. You'd need more planes in the sky, and that doesn't help anybody. All that does is drive up the cost of fuel because of the demand. And environmentalists should hate that. And all it does is cause the airline to have to buy more planes. So they have bigger expense. Whereas what they're doing is they are getting the most done with the least amount of jets needed. That's what the free market forces in the United States. And it's the exact reason that you don't see those kinds of airlines like you see in the Middle East and in Southeast Asia, and I guess in Europe too, in the United States. But it's also because, what the extent of that is, in the United States, everybody can fly. Scrounge up a couple dollars here and there, everybody can fly. In these other countries, it's limited. There's limited seats. There's limited capacity. There's limited jets. There's limited this. There's limited that. This is exactly what I wonder if you see me, the way my brain works, within a minute of watching one of these videos of his, I'm going to say starting 2 months ago or something, it automatically hit me. Why is it that this is the reason it's like this? You know, when you don't have to worry about the bottom line and you don't have to worry about budgets or anything else, it's amazing how people will then spend money. And it's all government money. It's all tax money, however they raise the money over in those countries. Whereas most taxpayers are never, ever going to be able to use those facilities on those planes. They may be able to fly in coach if they can get a ticket. So it's just fascinating to me that you can learn so much from a video that, you know, is not meant to point out. I'm not even sure that this guy who does this video ever occurs to him. I've never heard him talk about it. I've never seen him write about it. He mentions it in his videos how, you know, I'm the only one in first class on this flight. And there's only two other people in first class in this flight. And, you know, he mentions it. I don't know if he ever sits down and thinks, why is that? I'm sure he says, well, because it's so expensive. But then he has to start wondering, well, if it's so expensive, why do they even have so many of these first class accommodations on these flights anyway? Why is it? Furthermore, if people can afford to fly in those jets like that, couldn't they then just afford to rent their own private jet? Which I think is what's going on in the United States now. I don't know how. I guess people do fly first class. Once again, though, first class in the United States, because of market forces, is cheaper than it is over in those countries. Because, once again, there's more competition. And it's not government regulated. But I think a lot of people who are going to private planes instead. You know, they get a bunch of people together instead of them all going on. You know, they're taking a vacation and they can all afford it. Instead of getting on a commercial plane and flying first class, they rent a private plane and they all chip in and they get their own accommodation. Some, you know, whatever, the Gulfstream or something like that. Which, once again, is a more efficient use of time and money and fuel and everything else. So it's just, it's fascinating to me. It's absolutely fascinating that you can learn so much about government intervention, government expense, government regulation, government, how government runs business compared to how private companies manage the same business. I guess we could, another good example would be UPS and FedEx versus the post office in the United States. That's a good example. But I'm not sure this guy, Sam, it ever even occurs to him that's why it is. The reason that stuff's there is because the reason it's empty is because there's no demand for it. There's no demand for it. So why is it there? Shouldn't be there. All those first class accommodations should be coach accommodations so more people can get on the plane and the costs can come down per passenger. Let's move on to something else, one more thing, and this is one more reason why I think this Trump administration is going to be a fiasco. Sean Spicer actually said yesterday that Paul Manafort played just a very, very small role in the campaign Donald Trump for president. Now, the funny part about that is Paul Manafort was the campaign manager for Donald Trump. He took Corey Lewandowski's spot after Corey, how we want to put this, shoved that reporter from Breitbart.com. Remember that? Remember that whole thing from last year? I forget how long ago that was. But Sean Spicer actually said yesterday in a conference, when it had to do with Russia and James Comey and everything that he said yesterday. Sean Spicer actually made the comment that, oh, Paul Manafort, he just played a very small role in this. That's no big deal. That doesn't mean anything at all. Paul Manafort was the campaign manager. I'll leave you with that because I got to go. You can email me, EdwardDentzel@Reagan.com. Follow me on Twitter, this show anyway, USA Podcast. Find the show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern on the Prime Channel on RedStateTalkRadio.com. God bless. out my other show, Unfound, doing very well over there. You can find it on Podomatic in iTunes. Please listen, share, and subscribe. I'd really appreciate that. That Twitter feed is Unfound Podcast. You can find it on iTunes and on iTunes Radio now. Not on TuneIn Radio now. I got to go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.